You know, yesterday I was my own host. I just had me, and I just dragged everybody to come in the studio. Today, Carrie couldn't be with us again. She's, you know, gallivanting or something. I don't know, who knows? But I stole Carrie's husband, Dan, and said, you be the host. So here's Dan Gorgone. Now, if you've seen any amount of our video stuff, anytime something moves a little bit on the screen, Dan's made that for us out of the sweetness of his heart and sometimes with some protest. But it's because, Dan, you have such an experience in this. So not only have you done hosting before, but you're an incredible video guy and have put that to work in making like webinars and digital courses and all that kind of stuff. So
I appreciate that, Chris. Thank you.
Welcome to hosting.
I'm probably a better host than a video guy. So I hope that doesn't, set the tone for today's show. I'm just trying to help out and be useful today. Good morning, everybody.
I mean, even calling you video guy is such a low button, I think. So there's my mom, Diane Brogan. There is Chloe over in Scotland. She says, hi, Dan.
So good morning.
It's going to be an epic show today. So today we have two guests that I can't wait to speak to both. Lacey Fay, who lives a vintage 1950s lifestyle. We're going to talk about what that means, but you're going to be so cheery. Like, she just brings cheer. And then Ben Cooley, who is stopping human trafficking on levels I could not even imagine when I asked him the question backstage. So we're going to talk about human trafficking, which is super vitally important. And we're going to talk about 50s vintage lifestyle, because why wouldn't we, Dan? We're the Backpack Show.
Hi, everyone. Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam and NFL Blitz, welcoming you to the Backpack Show. Your hosts, Chris Brogan, Kerry Gorgone, Boom Shakalaka.
Backpack Show.
I really contemplated stopping the flow of the music going, and then, but there's no stop and start of this thing, so I can't. Hey, look at that. It's my biological father, Steve Brogan, also in Las Vegas. And hi, Ian. I don't know Ian, so glad to see you here. Hey, Paul. Hi, Leslie. So what a group we have today. I'm really excited, and I want to make sure we cover. There's so many cool things to cover. But Dan, I want to talk first about, you've done projects all over the place. You've been a cinematography kind of guy. You've worked on independent film way back in the day. You know what? How do you sum you up when you find yourself having coffee with a bunch of weirdos somewhere? Back when we could do that.
Oh, yes. Oh, great question. And I was just thinking about one of the last times that we had coffee together. It was, gosh, probably 15 years ago, or it was some local Cambridge, Massachusetts business meetup or something. I remember when a whole bunch of us got together, and great memories of that. But no, that's originally where I'm from, where Carrie and I are both from, Massachusetts. Went to college together. That's where we met. And, everything, it's, you know, wonderful history from there. But myself personally, professionally, I've done web design, and then I kind of took that into education. But then on the back end, personal stuff, I got into filmmaking in college. I was in a great filmmaking group, Random Food Pictures, back at Bentley College, now Bentley University out in Waltham, with my friend CeCe Chapman and many of our friends from college, from high school, from all around. We would go out on weekends and make these crazy independent zero budget movies, and we had loads of fun making fun stuff, making terrible stuff. It was just a lot of fun. But that is where I kind of learned the ins and outs of being on camera and being camera ready and preparing for video productions, doing editing. And then when you combine that with education, it leads to what I've kind of been doing for the last decade or so, which is online learning. And I guess I happen to be ahead of the curve, because nowadays online learning is a huge thing. And so I've worked with lots of subject matter experts and authors and CEOs, and then I've actually done the courses myself about every topic out there. And so whether it's in front of the camera, behind the camera, preparing the courses, helping someone get the course done, finalizing it, that's what I've been doing. So that kind of brings us here.
That brings us to today. Well, you know, I wanted to talk about, you know, your filmmaking just a tiny bit, because my first guest, Lacey Fay, is not only someone who lives an incredible vintage lifestyle, but who also runs a movie theater. And I don't know, we didn't ask if I could talk about the movie theater, but I'm going to. I'm going to ask. And then, but first, here's what I want to do. I want to talk to you about, you know, some of our sponsors, so we get that out of the way faster. Are you an author? You can make a really cool website, pub-site.com. You can have an author website made in a couple hours. These things are super fast. You get a 14-day free trial, $20 a month after that. If you don't feel like making your own website, I don't wanna, you can just have them do it for $500. We have just the last couple of days left in the Gorgone sausage closet. So if you want Carrie to send you a couple Johnsonville sausage, we're down to the last few, and then it's Lent. So send an email to carrie@chrisbrogan.com. If you want some Gorgone Johnsonville sausage. StreamYard is how we make this show so easy. Dan just popped right in. He's a pro at it already because he knew. cbrogan.me/StreamYard. If you don't like my face, just go to Castos and make your own podcast. Castos.com is how we have the audio version of the show. I have just one more of these, .online. If you wanted a .online domain, you know, because in the 50s, .online domains weren't as popular. But as we get to modern times, they got a little more cool. So you could have LaceyFay.online. Just like I have the backpackshow.online. 99 cents for the first year if you go to cbrogan.me/online and just put in the code Chris, all caps. There we go. That's all our ads. We did it.
Did Johnsonville approve the Gorgone sausage closet term? I don't remember. Oh my goodness.
They wince.
That's a marginal yellow like card this. There, Brogan.
They wince when I say things like that. Hey, Elizabeth. They're like, why do you make it sound like they're really in a closet in Carrie's house? Because Carrie like Instacarts them.
They're all hanging in a closet.
They come from real grocery stores with like refrigerators. But I just like the image of her like, you know, she's got a cigar in the corner of her mouth and she's getting to the back and digging through some clothes. Shoebox full of kid photos.
Get me a bratwurst, honey. Thank you.
Exactly. Bring me a brat, and I'm going to need some of those new strips. All right. I am grabbing Lacey Faye to save me from my own madness here. Hello, Lacey Faye.
Hello, Lacey.
Hello.
Let's start way back at the beginning. Were you 7 and still thinking you needed to be in the 50s, or like, did this come to you over some amount of time? And why the 50s?
Okay, so I've always loved history and I've always loved antiques. And so that does go back to childhood. I love things with a story, with a past, and that's just so fascinating to me. And so I would go like antiquing with my mom and my grandma. And so I've always loved that, but I kind of really honed in on the 1950s, maybe like 8 or 9 years ago is when I really started kind of diving into it. And that was mostly because of my grandparents. So they were married in 1955 and they always told the best stories. They had the coolest 1950s life. My grandpa had a 1956 Corvette. And so they would cruise in the Corvette. They would race it. They would go to the dances and the sock hops. And those stories to me, it just made it sound like the most fun time to be alive. And so that's kind of what drew me mostly to the 1950s specifically. But yeah, so fun family stories.
It is fun. Well, so first question I have is when I looked through your posing and all this sort of a thing, is it true that no one knew where the camera was in the 1950s? Is that why everyone's forever looking off at a direction or something like that?
And that maybe so.
My real question is, you know, there's a certain way to model clothes in the 50s. It's not the same as you're not just wearing the clothes. You're taking on the look of the 50s. How did that start? You know, what brought you over that hump?
I've loved classic cinema as well. And the fashion magazines, old Hollywood, all of that. And so really I just kind of study it, I guess. I don't know.
Interesting times. Dan, questions?
Yeah, you know what? I was looking at your YouTube, Lacey, and there's so many like fun videos there where you kind of take on some aspect of the 50s and, you know, share it with everyone. I know one of them that, you know, you did was about 50s slang. And mm-hmm. comparing it to modern day slang. And you had said that you had gotten your son's help kind of bridging the gap there. What kinds of things can people find on your YouTube channel that might be fun for them to check out if they want to know more about the 50s?
That was a fun video, the slang video. I've done one around Christmas time. I did 1950s Christmas traditions, like Christmas of the 50s. I also do a series where I test out vintage gadgets, and I have a lot of fun with that. So I find, a lot of things from the 50s were gadgety and like modern, you know, and so I like to try to find those things and test them on my channel for the first time. Like my first time using them is to test it out for a video.
Is this a sustainable gig at this point? Is this just for passion and love? Where are you kind of in the spectrum of being able to make this the bread and the butter?
It's becoming more and more so that way. I never thought it would be. It's always been my passion and my hobby and kind of just a love for me. And so I want, a lot of people had questions about that. And so I started sharing it, and then a lot more people jumped on board. So, I mean, I guess it could be that eventually, but really I do it for me because this is what I love to do.
Hey, Chris, buddy, feline invasion coming your way. Hit the floor, man. Hit the floor.
There is another cat's butt on this show. That's the second cat butt visible on this show ever. Had to do
I have a platypus. Sorry, that's all I get. Sorry.
Perfectly normal platypus. Kate Colgan has a question for you. She says, I think your shirt is from the 50s, Chris. Lacey, what color would you say is Chris's shirt?
It looks kind of like a beige to me. I don't know. That's how it's coming across.
We get a lot of arguments about the colors of my clothing. I don't know why. What did Lacey think of the Queen's Gambit's fashions?
Oh, those are great. I've only so far watched the first episode. That one is more 1960s, but they nailed it. It's really good.
When you go, you mentioned earlier, I'd asked a question about, you know, you have something to do with, you get a lot of your stuff through thrifting and going and finding it out and about. You said maybe 80%+, maybe 90% comes from that. What do you look for nowadays versus when you were starting, and what still just lights you up and you have to have it?
I mean, there's so many things, but, so when I first started, I didn't really know where to look for vintage clothing. And so at that time, I just mostly stuck to reproduction vintage. So companies that remake things, you know, now to look 1950s. But as I went on, then you learn more as you go, you know? And so, I started hunting the thrift stores, looking for clothes, mostly clothing at first. And then once I bought my home 6 years ago, then I started looking for everything vintage. And so really, you do have to know what to look for, but if you're immersed in that time period and you kind of have already studied it and know the things, then that's what you look for. And I actually do have a YouTube video coming out this next week on how to identify vintage clothing. So that will be there a little more in depth anyway. So
I was talking to my parents last night, knowing that you were coming on, Lacey, and they both grew up in the 50s. And so I asked them, you know, Mom and Dad, what are some things that you remember from the 50s that you miss, that you kind of wish that we still had around today? And I know my mom mentioned drive-ins and my dad mentioned the cars. And he started going into this great detail about this. The way he described it sounded like a bus, but it was like, oh, you know, we had these big, you know, bench seats in the car. I think it was a 53 LaSalle or some kind of thing. I think that's what he said it was. But there's, speaking to Ian's question, you know, what's your vintage dream car? My parents were talking about their experience with cars, and especially my dad. Do you have a car in your garage that's maybe a 50s car? Does it extend into the garage as well?
Not yet, unfortunately, but we're working on it, that's for sure. So dream car, there's a few, but I really am into the 1950s atomic look. So anything that looks like a spaceship, I'm all in. So that would be like 1959 Cadillac with the huge fins on the back. And also the late 50s station wagons are surprisingly really cool looking. So either one of those I would I'd be all over it for sure.
And by the way, we're playing this video right now of you in this 1950s looking kitchen, but is that a set or is that actually your house?
That's my kitchen. Yeah, that's my kitchen in my house. Uh-huh.
Well, so then that goes to the question Paul had, which is, was your house built in the 50s?
Yes, my house was built in 1953. And luckily, it's been kept very much the same. It's not been modernized very much at all. I have my pink 1950s bathroom with the pink tub and sink and toilet and the pink tile, all of that.
Kate has an interesting question. Does any of your 50s stuff come from your family of origin? Like, is any of it your 50s stuff through the house and the family?
There are a few things that I've gotten from my grandma. I have a purse of hers and then her entire brooch collection, which she had an extensive one. So all of those are from my grandma as well. But yeah.
The evolution of your channel, by the way, seems like it's gone through as you learn from other YouTubers to as you feel much more comfortable in your own style. It's interesting how that went. Do you now find people, you know, trying to recreate the Lacey Faye style, or has that happened yet? Because I can see lines when you were still doing other people's thing your way, mm-hmm. versus when you are full on Lacey Faye. Have you seen that coming up behind you as well yet, or not? You know, what do you think?
There is a little vintage community that's growing on YouTube, and I find it very fun. I feel like they mostly are doing vintage their way, which is the best way to do it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there are a few other vintage YouTubers that are popping up and I love it. I think it's so much fun.
I have one other question. Sorry, Dan, I keep hogging her. The look and feel and the clothing and everything, I think is the biggest appeal, but life was different then too. There were a lot of different, you know, very traditional, gender roles. There were a lot of traditional, you know, the man says this kind of stuff going on in the world. Is that part of it for you? Or is that, you know, do you keep that on a shelf somewhere? Or what's your feeling about the beyond the trappings?
I think that's the part that we need to learn from. I think that's the part that we need to look at and say, okay, we've come this far. We still have a long ways to go. So yeah, that's definitely, I always say, it's not my phrase to coin, but vintage style, not vintage values, meaning that we've learned from those things. This is the style and the aesthetic that I love, but those aren't the values that I embody at all.
I have a feeling Kate's so she is living in the first episodes of WandaVision. I think everyone must be thinking that thought. What dishware do you have from the 50s? Kate asks. I'm going to guess a lot.
I have a lot of Pyrex. I have a big Pyrex collection for sure. Yeah.
That's so fun. I think I had one last question. Oh, I was going to ask about the movie theater. So you were mentioning, and I don't know if you feel like talking about it or not, but your day job when you're not Lacey Faye on a couch is running a movie theater. We both, you know, that's a really tough thing. Can you talk a little bit about the theater? Do you want to talk about the theater?
Sure. Yeah, I love the movie theater. In fact, I've worked there for like 20 years. It was my first job when I turned 16 years old. I stayed because I love it. I love the movies, classic cinema, all of that.
Is it a vintage movie theater or do we go there to watch modern films?
No, it's not a vintage theater. It's very modern. Mm-hmm. But a lot of our guests do comment and they ask if I'm dressed this way because of the theater or like I need to because of my job. Like, no, this is just my personal style. So I guess it fits with my job is what I'm saying.
I guess so.
Well, that was something I was curious about too, was how far, and I'm sure other people wonder too, how far does the, you know, the lifestyle extend? Does it extend beyond just the YouTube channel and the Instagram photos and the interview you're doing now? Is this a 24/7 lifestyle that you're living?
Yes. Yeah, if you see me in the grocery store, this is how I would look. Yeah.
So do you ever get weird looks, or do you get like comments like, "Love your hair," like we've gotten from, you know, the comments here?
Yeah, I do get a lot of comments I mean, when you look different, people notice, I guess. And so, yeah, for the most part, it's all very complimentary. People are very kind. A lot of people say that, or they ask if I'm like dressed up for something, if I'm in a play or something like that. No, this is just the way I like to dress.
Paul had asked a question from Ireland. Is your 50s style purely American, or do you do any kind of European style or appeal?
Mostly just the American 1950s, but that's what's accessible to me. That's what I know the most about. I'm definitely not opposed to learning more about every aspect of the era, for sure.
We like to say, Paul, that the American 1950s was way better, but I'm only doing that because Ben Cooley's coming on and he's a Brit. So I just figured I'd just stick it to him one time more. Kate mentions, by the way, the drive-ins were the social media of the 50s. Thanks for reminding me of them. Memories will be popping up all next week. Lacey Faye, thanks for coming on the show. So glad to have you. Stick
thanks
around
so
if
much.
You can. We have a few more things to do with you later. Hang tight. Boop. So I did all my ads, Dan. I did all my homework, Dad. Can we play? Now I can ask Ben Cooley a question or two.
I wanted to encourage everyone to go check out Lacey's Instagram and her YouTube, because that's where all the great stuff is. I was poking through some of that stuff last night, and her photo shoots are amazing. They're like you were saying, they look completely like legit from the 50s. Like all the poses and the outfits and everything. It's really just lovely. And then her videos are fun too, because she gets the occasional feline invasion as well, just like you get here in the morning. So,
and they come at the very beginning of a lot of these videos. So every time I kept trying to do this, like I'm clicking a lot of things to show that on the screen. It's not like one button and it pops. And I'm like, I can't get the cat because it's so fast. There's a lot to see there. So now we talk to Ben Cooley. We've got a wait till you see this 90-degree turn. But
yep, slight change.
Slight change. Oh, Ben, I hear me. And I don't hear you. I bet you hit buttons.
Don't hear you, Ben.
You might have to refresh your browser, Ben Cooley. I'm gonna knock you backstage for a second. Maybe just refresh this browser if you can. We had it nailed down, but you never know. Things could happen. His earbuds could have picked up the phone, which happens a lot. Well, in the meantime, we got a few comments. So Kate asked the question, is there any particular item that you're looking for that you can't find? I bet there is like a great white whale that Lacey's still chasing out there. Like, if only I had this fondue set, that kind of a thing. You probably imagine that. I love what you're doing, Lacey. It's so cool. Like going back in time. And then Kate said, we'll definitely check it out. Yeah. The YouTube is something else. Don't you think, Dan? There's some real great production value.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the fact that she's got her whole house there, especially the kitchen, the way that it looks. And, you know, it's basically you just have to shoot. You're shooting in your kitchen. It's not like you're setting up a set. You know, like right. I have to occasionally set up a green screen to put myself in front of my videos and stuff. But, you know. I should say, actually, I do have a little bit of 50s decor, technically. These baseball cards are from 1959. So, and, you know, it's like those, as if you couldn't tell, those colors like kind of represent all the colors you'll probably see in the outfits and the kitchens and the Tupperware of the era. So
I see them behind, great style. I see them behind Lacey right now. So I can see the blue from the glass piece and all that. So, all right, let's try Ben again.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes, sir. We
oh,
did it.
Good. Gosh.
I was a little bit nervous.
I thought it was because of your anti-British jokes that you were just, you know, trying to just silence me. It was just a little joke on me.
Oh, my. No, I've been to Britain 4 or 5 times. The big joke for a long time was that I'd never, ever been quite to London proper. I'd been out to like Devon and the moors out that way. I had been up to Doncaster. I mean, nobody goes out to Old Donny. You know, that's where I was, you know, because that's you go where people are and that's where they put me. And it took me a long time to get to the city. When I finally got to the city proper, I was put in the most American part where the Westfield Mall was.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
You know, it was me and a whole bunch of other cultures who were not, you know, traditional British culture. So I had a very interesting first time there.
Well, I mean, Doncaster, I'm not going to lie to you, Chris. If we were friends back then, I would have said, no, don't do it. Yeah.
My buddy Rob was
because of the people.
My buddy Rob was from that area, roughly, you know, Bow and those villages. So Nottingham, which everyone thinks of Nottingham, Robin Hood, but they don't think what real Nottingham is. So Poppy, one last two things from the previous guest. Lacey has one of the best YouTube channels, says Poppy. Hi, Poppy. She does everything, decor and life, hair and makeup. And our boy Rocco says, I feel like the kitchen would be the strongest part of the 50s. Ben, we're switching gears dramatically. This is, you know, your car's in drive. We just jammed it in reverse. But this is important. We're going to talk a little bit about Hope for Justice. Hope for Justice is ending modern-day slavery, modern-day trafficking, a thing that people think isn't a thing anymore. That's the first thing. Ben, and all jokes aside, I don't think of it that way much. Like, I see it as a plot point sometimes in movies, and that's about it. But my gosh, there's a lot going on. It's a very active thing. Can you sort of dump us in a horrible bunch of numbers about just how horrendous the situation is and what you're up against?
Yeah, there's over 40 million slaves right now estimated across the world. And it's probably actually more than that. It's just the challenge is that we can't quantify the number, but it's literally millions of children, men, women that are being exploited in predominantly three areas, which is one that's talked about most is sex trafficking, where, I mean, we rescue victims of sex trafficking. In fact, just in Nashville, just a few weeks ago, we rescued six women from a brothel that were being exploited. Second is forced labor. So people that are forced to work, you know, actually, you know, there's like over 19 million slaves in the supply chains of well-known brands across the world. And that's like, you know, when we love our phones, don't we? And we love our computers and our battery life, you know, with cars, et cetera, et cetera. But a lot of the world's cobalt comes from Congo and DRC, which is where some of the worst exploited children are. You look at, you know, we rescued over 400 victims a few years ago in some of the well-known brands in the UK. So that and then domestic servitude. Do you know, we helped a woman that was enslaved in California. Our team worked with her. She actually spoke a certain dialect of the Filipino language, and she was held in slavery. She was sick, and the trafficker decided that because she only spoke this one dialect of the Filipino language, that he would take her to hospital. And would you believe it? That actually, when she was shown to the nurse took her into a room, and that nurse was from the Philippines and spoke that exact dialect, 198 wow. dialects, I think it is. And she'd been trained by Hope for Justice the week before, and she phoned our office. We were able to work with the FBI. We got that woman out of slavery. She'd been held in slavery in the United States of America for 37 years. And now she's walking free. So that's kind of what we do. We helped 102,000 children in our programs last year. We're in 11 countries, 35 locations, and we're passionate about ending slavery.
That's the thing that was so shocking. I was doing homework and reading about the organization, Ben, is that, you know, when you say the term slavery, it doesn't, you know, it's not toiling in a field somewhere like some of us, you know, insulated Americans in the suburbs might think. Slavery takes so many different forms. And it was shocking reading some of the scenarios that you're talking about, you know, fathers from Eastern European countries getting a message from somewhere in the UK saying, we've got a job for you. And, you know, they're desperate to support their families. And they, you know, they just go without even, you know, any sort of, you know, any sort of safety, any sort of way back, they just go. And then they discover, no, this isn't exactly what you thought. And now you're stuck here. And, you know, so is that a typical kind of scenario?
Yeah.
Where it's kind of a bait and switch and people are fooled into things. I know kidnapping is another thing, but you know, what are the things that happen that where people are dragged into these situations?
Vulnerability. The number one thing I would say for the thousands of victims that we've worked with is vulnerability. And so you look at that with mental health, you look at that with economic vulnerability, educational vulnerability, you've got vulnerability that is the number one factor. Now, interestingly, in America and the West right now with COVID and how lockdown has happened and how more children are on devices now than ever before, one of the things that's a rise right now is children being targeted on online gaming and on and social media, groomed for sexual exploitation. In fact, in I'm currently in our Nashville office. In Nashville, a few weeks ago, we identified and rescued a 15-year-old boy that had been groomed on one of the gaming apps. There's so many aspects to human trafficking. It's so diverse in how traffickers are exploiting children, men, women, but there are good organizations like us that are trying to stop it from happening and bring awareness to the general public to say, actually, if we stand shoulder to shoulder, if we make ourselves aware, then we can do great and glorious things.
And I think that the organizations that are doing this, the people that are doing this, that are taking advantage of these vulnerable people, they don't want anyone to know about it. And they want to hide this. They want to keep it a secret and get away with it for as long as they possibly can. How can you spot things like this when you're out there and you interact with a family and you see a servant or you interact with a company and you see people working in a shop or something somewhere? How do you know if something isn't right? How do you know if there's potentially a problem?
Well, I'm glad that on screen right now that you've got actually one of the first ways that you can do it is education, and you can find out about the kind of indicators which is on the screen right now. But you're right, traffickers don't want to be they don't want to be disrupted at all, because they're making millions of dollars from the abuse of children, men and women. They are exploiting people for profit. But I think one of the things that we tell people to do is go to our website, book in, just get some training, particularly if you're kind of like in a frontline service, like working for the medical fields or homeless charities or sectors, or working with people with mental health. You can actually equip yourself with knowledge. You know that 64% of the victims that we rescued in the UK last year came from people that we trained. And that for me is paramount, is knowledge on this issue. And so if you are listening right now, go onto our website, hopeforjustice.org, go onto that site, educate yourself, and then if you see something, report it.
It is so many people can't figure this out. One of the things I was just reading on the site as I'm scrolling it just to make sure other people can see it, I was thinking about the fact that there must be so many cases of people being trafficked that we would mistake for just being illegal aliens. People who've come into the States, for instance, illegally, that we're thinking, well, they're trying to, afraid of cops and things like that. Well, I would be afraid of cops. ICE is going to deport me. That's what I would think. So there's all these behaviors that would seem common for someone just dealing with, mom and dad took me across versus slavers took me across. So how does that, that seems like quite a knot to unspool. Where do you even start that dialogue to allow people to feel confident to come get you? You have to be extra brave as one of these victims to come forward. How does that work?
That's right. And that's why I employ investigators. I employ people that have come from senior law enforcement backgrounds. So I have people that were ex-chiefs of police. I mean, one of the people that worked for me was a guy called Sir Peter Fahey, who had 26,000 staff within the police, deputy director of national crime agencies. And the guy that started our Nashville office headed up nationally majority of the anti-slavery, anti-trafficking work for the FBI. So I'm employing professional investigators that will go out and take that intelligence, build upon it, work with the local and federal law enforcement to actually build a case. And I think this is one of the most important things is that, if you suspect something, report it. There's a national human trafficking hotline. Report it. You don't know what that will lead to. You don't know how many people have spotted it out. And, you know, it's fascinating what our investigators have found. I mean, one case, I'll just tell you very quickly. Our team met with a woman that was a suspected victim of human trafficking. Someone reported it. And they'd had a conversation with her. And our team met with her and in this hotel and said, it's a great city that you're in right now, isn't it? And she's going, yeah. I said, do you like Liverpool? And she goes, yeah, I love Liverpool. What's really interesting is she wasn't in Liverpool. She was in Sheffield. She didn't even know where she was. And it's things like that that you can just you can start doing. But what I would say is work with the professionals, report it through, and we can start doing something about this.
So Paul had the question, how dangerous is this for your team extracting these people?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we put risk mitigation strategies in place. I mean, we run aftercare shelters as well. So, I mean, there's a lot of risks with once they're rescued. We have, I mean, we had over 2,000 children within our residential treatment centers globally last year. And so the risks to the children and to our staff, it is there. You know, we are dealing with serious organized crime. But the reality is we represent a society that is rejecting human trafficking. And 99.999% of people would reject this. And I think this is where we've got to spin it on its head and say, actually, we are an awakened people on this issue are more powerful than that. And I love what Dr. Martin Luther King said, darkness cannot drive out darkness, only light can do that. And we're people of the light. And when the light shines, darkness trembles.
Chloe asked the question, in Scotland, have more public events such as the recent Essex lorry deaths brought more awareness to your cause?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we have a location up in Scotland as well, so you know. So, you might have seen that a lot of the cases, that Vietnamese case, we did a case that was down in the Midlands of the UK where we identified over 400 victims in the largest case in British history. And we were able to support the victims all the way through to the prosecution process and the whole gang got dismantled. But absolutely, I mean, it's great to see that the media is reporting this, that we're starting to see traction. I mean, one of the most exciting things that's happening, Chris, if I'm honest with you, is actually business getting involved now in addressing slavery in their supply chains. I think we need to start seeing these big businesses to start looking at child labor, where their supply chains are and the risks within the supply chains. And we're working with some of the largest businesses in the world now in addressing that issue.
My friend Paul over in Ireland asked this question that relates to that. Is there a watch list for brands that you know we should avoid because they regularly use slave labor in their supply chain?
Well, there isn't. I mean, there is organizations that have done that. We haven't done that. But what we've started is an organization called a Slave Free Alliance. And Slave Free Alliance works with, you'll understand this terminology over in the UK, but works with nine of the top FTSE 100 companies. We're growing members, people like Aldi, people like AstraZeneca, people like Experian, and we're working with these top brands to actually start working towards. And that, for me, that phrase that you've got on screen right now is paramount, because what I say is it's not whether you have slavery in your supply chain that makes you a good or bad business, right? Because if you look at the complexity of our supply chains right now, I'll tell you now, you know, over 70% of British businesses believe they've got slavery in their supply chain, right? So it's not whether you have slavery in your supply chain that makes you a good or bad business. It's what you do about it that counts. And so for me, that's what we're holding people to account, is their action plans to address slavery in their supply chains.
I know when we were first talking to you, Ben, backstage, that Chris had asked about all the locks behind you on the wall. And it's not because you have a side business you know, creating locks for high school lockers or anything like that. It's because each one of those locks represents someone that you've helped rescue, right? And you've got locks all over the place, every location, you've got worldwide, right?
That's right. I actually came, if you want to know, I'm a firm believer in celebrate what you want to replicate, right? There's something about when you're facing like 40 million, you've got to celebrate the one win, right? And what we used to do is we used to, back in the early days when I started Hope for Justice, we used to crack open a bottle of champagne every time we got a rescue. And, you know, we used to put the tag of the name of the girl or a person that we rescued, and we'd store it around the office. And then, you know, then in one day we rescued 70 people. And then we were like, oh gosh, this is like, this is, you know, and then our staff meeting started to like, to start opening different, you know, like instead of going, hey, how are you? It was like, hi, my name is Ben Cooley. And, you know, and so we decided, we met this girl called Sophia in Cambodia, and she was 13 years old, and her mom used to lock her up with a chain and forced her to work in the day in breaking rocks and then she realized that she could make more money from her daughter by selling on an evening to men. And so she used to, you know, be exploited by up to 15 men a night. And our team eventually got a hold of her, and we were able to rescue her. And we literally cut off that padlock, and we broke the padlock. And she never needed that padlock, and it should have never been there. But we kept that padlock as a momentum of her freedom. And then we realized, actually, this is a great way of us celebrating. For us to walk past this wall and to know, hey, I know we're working with this case right now that's really difficult, but hey, we were able to help that person. And maybe we could help this person. And it's it does several things, but one of the things, it reminds us that change is possible. And so that's why we have Freedom Walls all over. And actually, some of the businesses that we now partner with, like Experian, for example, in the UK, Experian have Freedom Walls all over their offices. It's amazing.
To bring it out and bring it even more forward.
Yeah.
Paul had a question here about, is there any backlash to you as targets have said, you know, they don't want to be distributed or whatnot? So do you get pushback or fights or anything like that?
Yeah, we've had that. And, you know, I kind of, it's kind of comes with the territory, really, doesn't it? You know, but reality is we say Hope for Justice all the time, freedom is worth the fight. And justice is non-negotiable, and we refuse to abandon the least, the last, and the lost. And I hope that the listeners that are watching right now, they agree with me that slavery should be in the history pages. It should never have been there, but it should be in the history pages. And we've got to stand on the shoulders of giants like William Wilberforce and do the impossible. And, you know, here's the thing. You know, one of my favorite quotes of all time, and a lot of people come up to me and they go, hey, Ben, you know, I'm going to do a terrible American accent right now. Y'all, what you're trying to do, like with like human trafficking, it's impossible. You'll never end it. It's impossible. And I love the words of Muhammad Ali that say, impossible is just a big word thrown around by small-minded men who find it easier to live in a world that they've been given, rather to explore the power they have to change it. Impossible is temporary. Impossible is nothing. Impossible is a dare.
There we go. Now, Kate asked a question. I was curious. I can't imagine you at 7 years old on the playground. I really can't. You know, what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to grow up and I'm going to end human trafficking all over the world. How'd you get into this? What happened?
Okay, so you're not going to believe this, Chris, okay? So I was an opera singer, okay? So I used to wear tights and makeup and dance around, and I used to do that in operas as well. And I was a little fey 1950s joke. I heard about this issue. I was volunteering at an event and heard at that point in time UNICEF was quoting 27 million people quoting slavery, 1.2 million children a year sold, 2 children every minute. And I walked out of that building that night and I thought, wow, if that was my daughter, I would do something. And it was the next thought that changed the course of my life. Was they are someone's daughter, I should do something. So I did what any young, passionate 26-year-old opera singer would do. I booked an arena in England to tell people about it. We got 5,884 people to our first event. And then from there, kind of, the rest is history. We've got 11 countries, hundreds of staff. We've got like, I think we've got nearly 38 offices across the world. And yeah, it's pretty insane, really. I never thought I'd do this with my life. I thought I'd be singing Verdi and Mozart and dancing around in Baroque tights.
It certainly is very similar paths. I mean, tomato, tomato, yeah. They say.
So that was your call, Ben. That was how you got involved. How can anyone else that's watching right now get involved? Because I see a big donate button on the Hope for Justice website. Is that a good spot to start?
Yeah. You can start by donating. This is, people say, how is it funded? It's funded by people like you that sacrifice to make freedom a reality, because you agree with me that freedom really is worth the fight. And then I think it's just using your influence. I mean, Chris, Dan, what you've done today is you've opened us up to a new network, and you've opened us up to new people and hearing about this and going, actually, I want to join in too. And that's how it happens, right? You know, one of my most favorite quotes of all time is, what is, no one raindrop ever felt responsible for the flood. And it's so profound, right? That if we all join our little bits, right? If we just do our little bit, we can do an extraordinary thing with our life, because it's when we do it together that we can change the world.
I can't tell that you ever had a theatrical background.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's so painful.
you definitely bring your energy though, and it's but it's important to think about it. The big vast difference between having to read a line from old musty Shakespeare from the 1500s versus knowing that the words you're saying right now could impact millions of people in the next year or two. It's just huge. So, all right. So we have an ending of a show we have to do. So I'm going to grab our friend Lacey back out here. Well, Lacey, what a day we've had.
Yes.
It's
one of the things I keep thinking Lacey's signal should either be in black and white or Technicolor. And I don't know which.
Either people more jammed or less.
With the black and white. I like color way too much for that.
One question about the way the whole 50s thing goes is that it's also used sometimes for people as a retreat. We've been dealing with such stressful times, you know, the whole last year. I think everyone should want to live in the 50s. When we hear the heaviness of what Ben's dealing with, it definitely makes me feel that. Do people use, you don't have to say it's you, but do people use sometimes going back to a vintage time as a way to retreat from some of their stress for durations of time so that they can handle more?
Yeah, I think so. A lot of people have commented that, especially, you know, this whole last year, that my channel is a little bit of an escape for them to not think about the problems of the day. And I think nostalgia does that for people in general. You know, people long for the simpler times and things like that, especially when things get tough. But I don't know. For me, it's a lifestyle, but it's not an escape. I'm very much into the modern times as well and what's going on in our world. And gosh, Ben, I'm so glad that you were on here with me today, because now I know what's going, a little bit more even about that. I'm excited to kind of look into that more.
That's so good. Thank you.
I was thinking the question had been asked earlier from, I think, Paul Bond about, like, you know, do you care at all about Britain in the 50s? Britain in the 60s was cooler. I mean, the 60s in Britain was a way more vintagey time. Like, you had the Craze, you had all these like, hip and cool, bands coming across and all that. That was the British invasion. So I would have, if you were going to go back and be a vintage guy, would you be a 60s guy? Or, you know, what would be your era?
Well, I do like the kind of flat caps kind of, I'll tell you where I would go back to. I would go back to Vikings, because I've got this, like, I don't know if you can see, but I'm like, I've been watching about Ragnar Lothbrok and all of that sort of stuff. I've kept it a little bit longer at the side just for the moment, but like, I love that style, you know, like I would skull and all of that sort of stuff. I've probably got the history of someone in my ancestry probably came over and murdered a lot of British people, and I was a remnant.
It's funny you say that, because of course your hair totally made me think that right out of the gate. But then I was also, when that show Vikings came out, I loved it as well, because hello, Irish and Scottish and all that. That guy who plays Ragnar Lothbrok, whose name I always forget, looks ridiculously like my dangerous cousin Adam. And dangerous because we would do things like chase moose on mini bikes and all kinds of bad things. He was the one who told me to go pet that yellow dog. And as I'm petting that yellow dog, he tells me after, that's a coyote. Like, that was his idea of funny, you know? So that's what I see when I see the Vikings. So that's interesting. It is interesting. We all kind of have a time. Dan, what time period would you go back to if you were going to go back and sort of, you know, emulate a time frame?
Oh, gosh. I was thinking about that. And, you know, you and I both grew up in the 80s, so we remember those times quite vividly. But I don't know about the fashion, though. I think it was kind of rough. The music is one of the most wonderful things about it. The vintage video games, the baseball cards. I do love the 80s. But if I wanted to be comfortable, I might go to the 70s and have the longer hair. And be able to get away with that. I don't know. That's my thinking.
I would go 20s and 30s because I would have loved to have been jazz. Plus, I would fully Michael J. Fox that thing and invent all the Beatles songs for the first time and all that sort of thing. Decades earlier. That's my plan. All right. We're at the part of the show. We have a couple things we got to do. And one of them is we have to do our person of the day. So let me do that.
Oh, and here's our person of the day. Kaboom!
Kind of tricky because we had a lot of good people of the day. We had a lot of good people talking, but I'm going to give it to my pal Paul because, you know, Paul hasn't been by the show a whole heck of a lot. So, and he took his late afternoon here in Ireland. And so I thought I would do that. Paul's been in some really cool art projects that are worth talking about at some point. So congratulations, Paul. That entitles you to one free apple. You just have to go to your store, buy the apple, clean it, make sure you wash it because Carrie wouldn't want you to eat it the way it comes off the shelf. And you're handled. We now have to ask the one question we've asked every single guest that's ever been on the show. Sir Mix-a-Lot, Sister Anne Flanagan, Horacio Garcia Rojas, who played in Diablero, and now Ben and Lacey. We have the question, what goes in your backpack? It could be something physical, like an avocado. It could be something, that was by a clown, Saida Trujillo from Clowns Without Borders, who does humanitarian clown drops into war-torn regions to bring joy and happiness to people who are kind of dealing with the horrors of war. And it could be something like hope, or it could be something like pride in one's country, like Horacio Garcia Rojas talked about. He's not just a TV and movie actor, he's a Mexico City TV movie actor. So I'll start with Lacey Faye first. Lacey, what would you like to stick in your backpack today?
I would say authenticity, being true to yourself, and always got to have kindness.
Kindness is a super important one, and I am so big fan of authenticity. Although I think it's having you on the show gives people a chance to do that, because it's not all easy to dress that way and the look and feel and to kind of go around like that, because you do sometimes get the jerks and you do sometimes get the haters. And I keep thinking about garments. I don't want to give myself a yellow card today. And I know Dan knows where those buttons are, so I don't want to make him trigger. But I keep thinking about, there are some clothing changes that are in the 20s that are kind of worth it. So it's a choice to be authentic. Ben Cooley, before I make a mistake, what goes in your backpack, good sir?
Joy.
So
I think joy is intrinsically linked to strength. And I think if we're going to face all that's happening with the world, and I'm not just talking about the situation I talked about, I'm talking about what's happening with the pandemic and with all the impacts onto mental health and all of that sort of stuff. I think joy is intrinsically linked to our ability to get over all of the world's problems. And I think we should enjoy life. Life is meant to be enjoyed, not endured.
I think also I will offer Dan Gorgon, our guest host of the day, our excellent guest host. Dan, what would you throw in the backpack? You hear this question a lot from down the hallway. What would be something you would throw in the backpack?
I've heard many great answers. You know, an extra pair of teeth, like DJ Cumberbund says, because you never know when your teeth will,
set of teeth
will run out, and you really need them. there's been so many great answers, you know, empathy and you know, I think we learned so many lessons from this show, Chris, and I really am honored to be on here with Ben and Lacey, who are people who are, you know, they're trying to do what they believe in. If I was going to put something in the backpack, I would say 5 seconds, because every time that we're faced with a crisis, every time we're faced with a tough decision, it's okay to take 5 seconds to just kind of center yourself and think about what it is that you really need to do, what you really want to do, and to kind of summon that sort of bravery, summon that, you know, that I don't know, that fourth gear or something to kind of charge into. I just think that too many people often are too impulsive, or they just react without thinking. And if you just give yourself 5 seconds to kind of think about what it is that you're trying to accomplish and what you really want to do, you'll remember why you're kind of thinking about it in the first place. You'll remember what's most important to you. So you may hesitate, you know, in Ben's case, I can imagine he and his team have probably hesitated many times when faced with people who seem dangerous, who seem intent on maintaining their control over people. But, you know, to be able to summon that strength and that courage to go out and save those people is a really amazing thing. And it's wonderful. And that's what I kind of think about. Just kind of internalize that and you'll find what it is that you want to do.
That is quite the answer. So I guess we're going to stick that one right in there. I was going to say something about my grandmother and grandfather grew up in the 1950s. So I tell a story about my grandmother all the time during the show. And one of the things that I was very lucky was that they kept some of their old records. So I had a chance to listen to some of their phonographs. But as people have heard before on the show, my Grammy would be the kind of person who would put on something like a good old Benny Goodman. And then she'd go from Benny Goodman to Judas Priest. So I will tell you, one of the weirdest mixing mashups of audio that my grandmother ever put together on her phonograph was